Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Hello, this is Reeves Nicholson. It's alright, I don't know who I am either. You're listening to Dean and Andrew on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
Oh, faggots.
You can't say faggots, can you? Yeah, that's right.
That is right. That is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9 with Andrew the Apprentice and RV Miller. And this evening we are joined by our resident sex therapist, Christopher Fox. Good evening, Christopher.
Good evening, gentlemen.
You know you've got Chris on the show when the thing in your browser is 16 strange and disturbing sex fetishes. Really?
It's got nothing to do with me, boys. Would you like to talk about this problem?
What we do want our listeners to do, to message in on 0427JOY949 or email in onair@joy.org.au. Let us know, what is your favourite place to having sex, apart from the bedroom? Because that's what we're talking about tonight, environments for sex.
We are.
And it's not just the bedroom, is it?
It's not just the bedroom. In actual fact, one of the things I tend to deal with long-term couples is the fact that, oh, the sex life's died and they go to bed and they go to sleep. And, you know, we eat at a dinner table, we watch TV in the bedroom and, we watch TV in the living room and we sleep in a bedroom. So why do we expect to have sex in the bedroom?
So does that mean everyone must have a sex room?
No, I don't think people have to have a sex room. But, you know, having sex rooms can be fun, and there are premises that provide sex rooms.
Does it improve or decrease your property value if you sell it with a sex room?
I don't know, but we've got a property valuer coming out tomorrow. I'll ask him. Now, if we put a sex room in, would that increase the value of our house?
Maybe something subtle, just like the hooks in the ceiling. If you wanted the sling.
Well, hooks in the ceiling. When I was in high school, one of my friend's parents used to have hooks in their ceiling. And it wasn't until years later that we actually realised why there were hooks in their ceiling.
For the hammock.
For the hammock. Or for the hanging plants.
Well, they used to say it was for the hanging plants. And every so often there'd be a hanging plant there, but you'd go in and the plants would all be down. It's like, why?
Oh, that's fantastic.
What about outside of the house? I mean, are there places and you deal with straight couples and gay couples?
Yes.
For straight couples, where can they go for sex if it's not in the house?
Well, straight couples have sex in public just like poofs and dykes do. They have sex in more public places than what we do. In actual fact, I think gay men tend to be more circumspect or discreet in their public sex, whereas often, you know, walk around the city late on a Friday, Saturday night, it's rather disturbing, really, what you see straight people do.
Do you think that's a factor of the acceptance, if you like, of straight public displays of affection in general? So that it is an extension of that. They kind of go, well, I started kissing them, nobody complained, so now I'm going to shove, see where I can get my hands, see where I can get my rest of me.
Yes. And I also think it's also partly that idea. I mean, when we talk about the geography, the environment we live in, it's a heterosexual environment. And so heterosexuals tend to do what heterosexuals do in an environment. I mean, if two gay men were starting to have sex on, you know, Bourke Street, I'm pretty sure there would be a reaction, but maybe not as much of a reaction as a straight couple sort of going at it.
You don't think?
Yeah, I do.
But is it partly the physiological? Because a guy and a girl leaning up against each other, in
it
a certain
may be
way,
easier.
It can get away with it easier if it's penetrative sex.
It may be easier for them to have penetrative sex, but it's still, you know, we can still see when a couple's having sex.
Yeah, but walking down Bourke Street at 2 o'clock on a Saturday morning, Sunday morning, you're not going to see necessarily a girl giving a guy a head job, though. Okay. Obviously, I don't spend time in the city. You know?
Actually, one of the scariest moments I ever had was us on a wine tour thingy with a group of heterosexuals, which was just doing my head in. And on the way home, the bus left and we were on it, and I sort of looked out the bus window and there was this couple and she was giving him a head job in between the lines of vines in the vineyard. And it was like, oh, my God, that must be a decent-sized dick. Even I could see it from here.
And women do have the benefit of skirts.
Women have the benefits of skirts. It is easy for a straight couple to have sex in public. I would not say that's the reason why they tend to do it more than, or why they get away with it. I think it's more acceptable for heterosexuals to have sex.
Fair enough. So if it's more acceptable, and you, as you said before, gay guys in particular we're talking about here, find somewhere else to go.
What do you mean?
Somewhere quiet and
somewhere
and
quiet. I mean, look at where beats are. I mean, they're normally in central places, but within the environment of the beat, there's often reasonably discreet, and I use inverted commas around reasonably discreet places. It's not necessarily full out open public.
No.
Sex.
It's behind the bush.
It's behind the bush, no, in a toilet cubicle.
In today's day of, we have a variety of sex on premises venues in Melbourne. We've got, you know, from the cruise clubs to the saunas to the adult shops. Is there still a beat culture?
To what I understand, yes, there's very much a beat culture. There's a couple of websites devoted to beats and beat cultures where people message and maintain contact. I don't know that we'll ever get rid of beat culture because it is part of our culture, and it's, I think, in some cases, a necessary part of our culture. It's also been a part of our culture for, you know, hundreds of years.
Do you see it as, I don't know if this is a professional question or not, but, you know, we run the range of men who openly identify as gay, yep, bisexual, men who have sex with men but don't identify as being gay or bisexual. Do you see a difference in the venues that various men who have sex with men and their identity have sex?
From the work that I've done, yes. Yes. Men, depending on how they identify, will depend where they'll go. You know, guys who have sex occasionally, you know, the traditional men who have sex with men and don't identify, which I think is a ridiculous term, but, you know, those men are more likely to go to a beat, to a public cruising area.
Like a truck stop.
Truck stop or the local park, yeah, or whatever, rather than going to a sex on premises venue.
And they're possibly more likely to go to a heterosexually oriented sex shop, one of those arcade style shops where technically there's straight porn playing in the booth, but you could probably also get a head job from the guy in the cubicle next to you.
Through the hole.
Kind of thing.
Don't know, I've never been there.
I had a friend of mine who used to work for one. He said cleaning up afterwards was a nightmare.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email onair@joy.org.au to let us know, where do you have sex that's not in the bedroom? We'll be back with Chris Fox right after this.
Hi, I'm Hudson Taylor from athleteally.com, and I know a thing or two about wrestling in the ring. But nothing compares to these guys on Hide and Seek.
That's right, you're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Andrew the Apprentice and Avi Miller are joined by Chris Fox, our sex therapist.
That gives me a great idea, wrestling in the ring.
Wrestling in the ring?
Oh, that's a... Sounds like a delightful place to have sex, quite frankly. I've seen a few of those wrestling scenes. Back to our topic, Chris, come on.
Sorry, I was thinking of wrestling in the ring. That's all right. Yeah, it's having sex.
Yes.
We are talking about environments of sex. Let us know, 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. Chris, beats, they still happen.
The beats still happen. Beats are still there.
Because, I don't know, well... because I would have imagined that the increase in mobile applications, in particular, would have killed off beats to a large extent. Are you hearing that at all on the?
No, and I'm not reading that in the blogs and that.
Blogs?
No, I think the mobile applications are facilitating a different sort of encounter at beats. Beats are there. It's a place to meet and
I
have
suppose
sex.
It means, yes, it means if a convenient place for two people to meet if they can't meet at a house.
At a house, example. You know, it gives a public place, a safe place for people to meet. You know, and then there are, of course, I mean, people who get off on having sex in public. You know, the risk of having sex in public, of getting caught. Not that if they're actually caught, I think it would be a different story for them. But you
know,
the
risk.
It's the risk, the perception of risk, and that as a as an as a turn on, as an aphrodisiac.
Is that? This is going to be way too broad a question, I suspect. But is that healthy?
Sex in public is illegal.
Right. So if you're caught, you are going to be fined, arrested.
You'll be fined, most probably fined, depending on the police and what they're doing. But, you know, sex in public is illegal. Is it unhealthy? I don't know.
The question I have is around probably one of the things that the sex on premises venues, to a large degree in Melbourne and Australia, do is push a same-sex message.
Yes.
That's not something you're going to get at a park.
It's not something you're going to get at a park. It's also something you don't, I can say, you don't get in Poland either.
Right.
No safe sex message in the sex on premises in Warsaw.
Okay.
It's a very Australian thing.
So from that point of view, I suppose maybe there is, it could, sex on premises venues could actually be quite confrontational for some men, particularly those who don't actually identify as being gay.
I think it would be extremely confrontational for those that don't identify as being gay, because it's ultimately a very gay space.
Yes.
It's a gay space that's provided, and I think one of the things we did well in Australia in early HIV was make safe sex available in sex on premises venues. It's a very gay space. So somebody who doesn't identify as gay is going to be very confronted in that space.
But I suppose then you go to the next extreme if you look at what San Francisco did, and they, in fact, went to the point of banning bathhouses in the city of San Francisco. And in reading that legislation, they didn't actually ban bathhouses, they banned doors.
Yes.
so that the staff could continuously check that safe sex was happening.
Yes.
Was that a step too far, do you think?
I don't know that it was a step too far. I do tend to go, it was America, and they tend to go for the extreme rather than well-managed. But It was an extreme reaction. I will hold that I think in Australia with sex on premises venues we did the better job in introducing safe sex in and making it an unofficial code of practice initially than an official code of practice.
Chris, if you had a client, hypothetical client, obviously, that came to you and said, okay, I have a...
Andrew, is this one of these questions I have?
I have a friend. I have a friend, and the friend has a fetish for having sex in public with and other people watching, but his partner doesn't want to.
Yep.
What sort of advice would you be talking to about your client and whether or not there's something to explore?
It's... Well, the client, you're saying, is in a relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's about negotiating the boundaries of the relationship and working with both partners in the relationship about coming to an agreement of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable and what that means for the relationship. If the client who wishes to have, you know, wishes to be an exhibitionist, and that's what we're talking about, and the partner doesn't wish that to happen at all, whether the partner's involved or not, well, that then becomes a question about how important is this and how important is the sanctity of the relationship.
Fair enough.
It's one of those things that Dan Savage describes as the price of admission.
Yes.
You know, how much are you prepared to pay to continue the relationship versus, you know, what's a deal breaker?
Yes.
How... sort of generally, do you find that is that easy to negotiate? Is it difficult to negotiate? Do people have very different ideas of what is acceptable and not acceptable?
I think from my experience with couples is that they really don't discuss the deal breakers. They don't discuss what's negotiable, what's not negotiable. They meet, they have a general conversation, they fall hopelessly in love, they have fantastic sex, everything goes along, and then suddenly one of these issues pops up and we're in crisis. And it's one of those things in a relationship, you know, we need to continually to discuss what's going on and what we expect to happen, because in the beginning we're hopelessly in love, you know, we've got a rush of hormones, we don't think of all these things.
And just a quick one around that. I know it's slightly off the topic of sex on premises venues, but around that negotiation, is there a procedure that you go through about that negotiation? I mean, is there a way to facilitate that discussion?
I think there is a way of facilitating that discussion. That's about listening and empathising. And that's effectively what we do in relationship therapy, is trying to get couples to actually listen to each other and empathise and understand where each other's coming from.
You're on Joy 94.9, Hide and Seek. We're speaking with Chris Fox. Let us know, 0427-JOY-949 or email onair@joy.org.au of your thoughts about environments for sex. We'll be back very shortly.
Hi, this is Sam from the Melbourne Chargers and you're listening to Hide and Seek with Dean and Andrew on Joy 94.9.
That's right, here on Hide and Seek with Andrew. Tonight with Avi and Chris Fox, we're talking about environments for sex. Let us know, 0427-JOY-949, onair@joy.org.au.
The strangest place that you've had sex?
That's what I was just thinking. If people don't want to talk about where they've had sex, where's the strangest place they've
had
sex?
Well, it's related though, isn't it?
It is. And the environment for sex, I mean, why we're talking about it is that, you know, it's about sex being exciting, sex being fun. If we're just going to do it in the bedroom, in the bed all the time, and, you know, it's boring.
But it occurred to me during that discussion, we asked the question, what's the strangest place that you've had sex, which has a sort of pejorative connotation, like strange equals bad.
Mm. Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, but it'd be interesting, you know, I've had interesting places for sex. But I don't consider any of them as bad places or that sort of thing. So
what is it? Okay, Avi, what is it then that made them the strange? What was it that it did for you?
It's an interesting question. See what I did there? I think it's the unexpected more than anything else. So what's the most unexpected place you've had sex is a far more interesting question to me than sort of location. It's when did you get or have sex that you were never expecting it?
We've had an SMS on 0427JOY949 from Nick saying his favourite sex setting has always been the shower, especially public ones.
Don't know how legal that is, and he actually says that. And that probably also goes to that sort of locker room gym fetish style of sexual encounter, I suppose.
Yes.
Yes.
We've all got that one, haven't we?
Yes. I'm guessing that's public indecency.
I suppose it would be public indecency if it was an open shower.
Yeah.
Remember, I think it was a Victorian court ruling that actually came back and said in a cubicle behind a closed door was considered a private space.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it was in Victoria where that was found, I think, in the mid-90s, where two men were caught having sex in a public toilet, and it was found that because the door was shut, it was considered a private space, and it's the one defence that people have in Australia that is very rarely used because everyone's so embarrassed about being caught having sex at a beach.
We probably should find that legal ruling and make sure it's accurate. But
it's something along there. I'm pretty sure it was Victoria, but it could have been elsewhere.
Now, so as we should wrap up and say, Chris, that if you want to explore, if you're finding your sex life boring,
yes.
There's one way is to explore horizons, explore environments.
Move the sex out of the bedroom. Use the shower, the toilet, the kitchen, the lounge room.
The washing machine. We were trying to find the word.
If you know what the word for washing machine fetish is, let us know.
Yes. And I do recommend a front loader, not a top loader for that.
I don't know. You can attach things to the top loader.
Something water safe, I think, you know. Something with a 5-star water rating, quite frankly.
Now, boys. Chris Fox, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you, gentlemen.
You'll be back with us in a couple of weeks' time. Your website is
www.sexlifetherapy.com.au.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.